session number 11484, rule 1.
When I came out to my school.
Well, this is Ivor Duxbury, Real One. If you could very briefly tell me, Mr. Duxbury, you know, your circumstances about when war broke out, you were living.
I was living in Kamar then, and I was in the army, territorial, and I was on the means test, and I was called up. Embodied, as they call it in those days, I was called up because I was a key soldier, and I was called up in 1938, and then as an emergency. And after the emergency went over, we were disbanded, and I went back on the means test. So there was no work in my area; quite very bad. Poverty was in its rottenest form in my town, and then we went to camp in 1939. And while I was in camp, I was on brigade headquarters. And when the camp finished, we didn't get sent home. We were kept in a unit at Porthcawl.
Not properly.
Yeah. When war broke out on a Sunday morning, I'd never forget as long as I live. I was in a camp in Porthcawl. And Chamberlain was on the broadcasting. And 11 o'clock came and he spoke, and my Brigadier Myers, said to me, "Corporal, we're at war." And I had instruction because I was a brigade runner, and I had to go and run out to the different battalions and brigades with the different codes to tell them. Then the code was Exeter, that was the code, that they were mobilised for war. So anyhow, I was naturally a corporal, and I was in charge of brigade personnel, so for other ranks. And there was chaos there. The doctor was re-examining people, because if you went joint the territorial in those days, no medical examination. You went in front of a doctor. The doctor asked if you could walk to 8 miles, Llansteffan, and if you said yes, you was a member of the territorial army. And there was a lot of people that were unfit. In fact, on the very next day, on the Monday morning, the doctor had to examine everybody in the battalion. By the end of the day, we were about 50% down, because he would not pass the other 50. So we were a battalion that was not in existence, really. We only had half a battalion. So then we had intakes were coming in, and we were there for a while. Then I was sent down to Pembroke Dock to guard a boat called the Warrior, which is a well-known boat nowadays. It was one of the oldest battleships in the world. It wasn't capable of going out to sea, but they used it as a bunker for seaplanes to fill up their petrol from it. Then after I was in Porthcawl, I was sent from there to Barry, and from Barry I was sent out to Northern Ireland, to Bambridge in Northern Ireland, where to make up the strength of the 4th Battalion of the Welsh Regiment. Well, I was in Bambridge for a while. The condition there was very bad indeed. We were living like animals there. The accommodation was very bad. And then we were sent out to France. So this was a terrible state of affairs. Men that were category graded down were sent to France as POW guards. And they were inoculated and tested out, and some of them were unable to walk because of the inoculation had been too strong for them. So eventually we got to Beckenham, where we were to be, and they were in such a plight that they put them into houses and even rest for a couple of days. Then after being in Beckenham for a few weeks, and after we met the officers, we had a lot of officers there, and some of them didn't go down very well with the Welsh boys. We didn't have any Welsh officers at all. But we had one man, Captain MacGregor Miller from the Worcester Regiment, who was a proper gentleman. He was really a gentleman. He was an ex-1914 war chap, and he was one of us. He knew and understood the problems of the soldiers. And then we went to France, to Le Havre, and across to City Rennes, where we had a POW camp there.
What date would that have been?
That had been 1940. That'd be about January 1940. And we were out there for a while and hoping to guard these prisoners. And MacGregor Miller came on to me one day and he said, would you like to go up the front line? I said, yes. Well, he said, we might have to go up there because they've broken through for they're fighting very heavily there. So anyhow, our job then was to, the evacuation started. We were there for some time. We didn't have no prisoners. In fact, the laugh was that we'd made the prison cages to put our own people in, because a lot of our own people were put in after we went, because we escaped to St. Malo, and we came out of St. Malo, and we landed in the Southampton, and went up the New Forest. And we were up in the New Forest. While I was on board the ship, Miller, Captain MacGregor Miller, came on to me. He said, look, Corporal, he said, I want you to get the troops some tea and stuff, and will you do that? I said, yes. So I made the tea from, got the tea going. And when we got back in Southampton, Major Bethel, and Lieutenant Constable and a few other of the officers were getting a petition signed to get rid of Miller, saying that Miller had not played the game with the troops, and I didn't agree with this, and I wouldn't sign it. I said, no, none of the Welsh boys would sign it. But there was friction there between the Welsh troops and the English troops. There was definitely friction there. The Welsh boys were speaking their own language, and they didn't like it. The English people didn't like it. And we didn't like the fact that we didn't have many NCOs. We didn't have many officers. Well, anyhow, when we got into Southampton, we were told that we were going to go to another camp. So they sent us from Southampton up to a place outside Southampton. And the next thing we had was on a Saturday, we were told to get ready and that we were going to Canada. So the boys all said, oh, good, we're going to Canada. So little did they know they were going on the boat, the Arundora Star, but he went from there to Liverpool.
Yes, I think I'm a little bit confused, if you don't mind, Mr. These people, where do the internees come in?
They're coming now.
They're coming, yes. Yeah. Had you not met them before?
No.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no. This was your first introduction to them, was it?
Yes. So when we got to Liverpool, we went on the Arundora Star. And it was a Sunday, and all the Welsh boys got together, went up on the helm of the ship and started singing Welsh hymns and everything. And with that, one of the chaps came up from Carmarthen, Billy Ely, and he said to me, hey, Duxbury, he said, yeah, come down here and see who's coming on the ship. He said, his old Rabiotti, his Conti and all there. I said, you must be talking daftness. I went down, and there was these boys, these internees who I'd been to school with, who I knew personally, I've been interned. So I said to them, what the hell have you done? And I was told to get away by the Scots guard and bring them down. And I had a lovely row there with them. So anyhow, when we got up there, I was called up to the company commander. And I was told that your job on the ship is to guard the deck house, the deck and the wheel house, and your personal bodyguard to Major Moulton, and said nobody comes up on the bridge, right, sir. So I had my little section with me, so we were there. So then these Italians and Germans came in. And I was keeping observation now because I wanted to know exactly where to put my guns. And I saw these German submarine commanders coming in there with all the crew, and they put them right under the bridge. And I was a bit worried about this. I said, oh, bloody hell. I said, if they broke through there and take control of the bridge, they'd have the ship as well. So I goes upstairs, and I was appalled to see all the barbed wire there on the lifeboats. There was barbed wire everywhere. I said, what the hell are they doing here? We hadn't had a chance to see the ship before because we weren't allowed up there. So I said to Captain Moulton, I said, sir, I said, this is ridiculous, I said. There's no possible way of us getting out of here, I said, because of the fact is that the barbed wire will stop us. Yes, he said, I know that, he said. So then Major Bethel came up with his Lieutenant Constable, the Sergeant Major. So I said to the Sergeant, this is no good. I said, the wire here is stopping us again. No, it's no concern of you. You're here to do as you're told. Well, I said, I'm bloody well not here to do as I'm told. I said, I'm here to be a soldier. I'm not going to be dead before I am really dead. I said, this will kill us, I said, if anything happened. So then I said, as they were talking, I said to Captain Bethel, are you aware, sir, I said, that there's German submarine commanders and crews underneath this thing here, I said, under the bridge, I said, and if they go out, they can overpower the guard and get in. It's up to you to see. They don't overpower you. I can't do that. I said, there's too many entrances to stop. See? So he said to me, he said, well, he said, all right. He said, we'll ship them tonight. So they did. So they took at night time, they took their Italians out of their nice bunks downstairs and put the Germans down there and put them there for safety's sake. It was a bit of an uproar about it, but it's all right. But anyhow, we had their challenge. I looked for the window and I could see there were panels up, but I knew, and a lot of the other boys there from the valleys. They were mostly Welsh Italians, really. So, of course, we couldn't see them without the cigarettes, so we'd give them cigarettes, we'd give them some food on the QT, like broke down, we know about it, and we treated them as human beings. So anyhow, this went on for a few days. There was no cruelty by our troops. The troops behaved properly to them. They were really sorry for them. But the officers were really very, very aggressive. Oh, they shouldn't have this and they shouldn't have that. But the troops, I think the troops really resented this, and they felt that that these Italians were wrong. Because when we all conversant with international law, we had to be conversant, there was no red crosses on the side of the boats to start off with. And internees and prisoners should not have been on the same boat. That's a different distinction. So anyhow, Tuesday morning, not quite sure, it's on the 2nd of July anyhow, I wouldn't go downstairs sleep, I slept on top. And with that, the boys said to me, they said, do you get on for tea for the boys? No, we're having our tea. And one of the boys says, look out there. And I could see the submarine thing up. So I ring the bell. But bang, it came before we had a chance. I bangs the bridge door. Captain Morton came up. And up come these officers. And the boat was starting to list very, very early. So he said, he give the order, prisoners and internees in the boats first. There was just a scarp, and my boys stood fast. And there, behold, was the sergeant major and all the sergeants and the other ones in the boat. So Captain Morton said to me, he said, that's not on. He said to me, I said, well, I said, I can't stop them. I said, they're over my rank, I said. So I said, he said to me, I will put some shots over there. So right though, I said, I'll be delighted to do so, I said. And if some of them miss, I said, it won't be my fault. So I got over my Bren gun and I let a couple of bullets go over the top of them. They soon got off the boat. So we got the Italians and anybody else that came along. There was some very helpful Germans. I couldn't know them all. I went to the boats. And Captain Morton said to me, he said, well, he said, Corporal, he said, nothing more you can do. You better get in the boat. What about you, sir? No, I'll stay on. I'll be all right. So I goes to get my boat. I'm lo and behold, I looked, and there was there was our boys hanging like turkeys from the barbed wire that was on the side. They couldn't get off. We had to hack our way through the barbed wire to get the boats. I got marks on my hands today where the barbed wire ripped me. And I got on to the... got onto the side of the boat and looked down, and there was a lifeboat in the water upside down where they'd mishandled it. And there was other lifeboats hanging from the ropes that hadn't been launched properly. So we got down, I got down first because I'm a good swimmer, got on the boat, then Billy Ely came down, Robertson and all my gang came down with me, and I stretched them across the boat, and I was learnt the way out to up tip a boat. So we bent over and one, two, three, up we came. So we bailed it out with our steel helmets and got the rest of the boys down. And then we started picking up people. We picked up the doctor. We picked up a couple of film producers, Mario Zampi. We picked up Goldie. We picked up Rabiotti, Conti, Alfado, Lufanasi, Emrin Davis, Sergeant Grouty, and Sergeant Evans, and as many other Italians we didn't know. So we got him onto the lifeboat, and Sergeant came on, and I took charge of the lifeboat, because I knew to work a lifeboat. And we said right to us, said keep in to this route, yeah, because this is the sea route. So in the afternoon, a seaplane came over, and the seaplane dropped some stuff, but we couldn't get at it because we weren't fast enough. We had a boat; they went and got the rations, but we didn't get any of them. And that evening, then this Canadian destroyer came around, and picked our boys up, and. I was on board the destroyer. We were wet because not much wet as some people were, but we were wet, and we dried our clothes and got out. And in the morning, had some food. He gave us plenty of food and rum to keep us warm. We landed in Greenock, and we were all taken, put in this big cage at the other prisoners' cage, internees and all. And they said to me, "Oh, we can get a message back to our wives." I said, "Don't worry about that. We'll get out now." So me and Billy Lee, they sorted us out. We were allowed to go out. The church in Greenock was very good to us. Gave us food and gave us a few shillings, get cigarettes. So I went and got some envelopes and writing papers, and I felt very sorry for these prisoners and internees. And I went back there against orders, anyhow. And I give them all a bit of paper, and they give me their addresses. And they put them in, and I said, right, I'll get them posted. So I shoved them all into a letterbox. I'd wrote any stamps on. So there must have been some cursing the other side when the wives got them, but I didn't care, I'd done their job. So then we were told we were going down to London, and I went up to see Mario Zampi and Goldie and a few others. And they said to me, will you drop a call in the club and tell them we're safe? So I said, give us write on a bit of paper. So they did. So we got down to London, me and Bill Ely. We were mates together. And we got to the station, Euston Station, and we came out and they said, I could be down. We've got to be in Victoria Station by a certain time, by 12 o'clock. So we came up. We didn't have no money. So we asked the taxi driver, which way to... The Monsignor restaurant in German Street. Oh, it's a bit away, he said. Oh, well, can we walk it? Or jump in, he said, I'll take you there. So he took us up there. So we came out the taxi and went in the club. And when he was in at first, in uniform. So anyhow, he said, we want to see Maria Gassani's wife. So she came out and we take a letter for you. So give the letter. She came in, she was crying, she came in. You hungry? Yes, we said. So we had a good feed and plenty of drink. And they said, are we going to go back to Victoria? Oh, we'll get a taxi for you. So anyhow, they came then all on, came on to us, thanking us for what you've done. And we went back to the to Victoria Station. Now, in the meantime, had we not gone to Mario Zampi, we would have been transferred onto another boat, the Dorena, but we didn't go on that boat, and I'm glad I didn't go on that boat, because the prisoners in that boat had a very rough time off the guard. But we went from there.
Yes, did you hear, I wonder when you heard, that they had put the survivors from the Arundora Star on the Daniera, what you thought about
disgusted.
That?
We were very disgusted. It was absolutely inhuman to do it. They'd just gone through an ordeal, which many people would have died, and to do this again to them was something deplorable. And we were really annoyed about it, because we knew the officers that went there, what they were like, because they weren't really nice chaps at all. Well, anyhow, I came off the... I came from there, and we were sent to Minley Manor.
Could I stop you at that point? Yeah. Subsequent events. If I could ask you a little bit more about the Arundora Star. Yeah. And, you know, it's very interesting you saying you seeing the internees and recognising some of them and not knowing what they were doing there.
Yeah.
When were you made aware of, you know, the fact that they had been interned as enemy aliens?
The sergeant told me.
What did you think about that?
Disgusting. I was disgusted.
Yes, did you know these people,
oh, yes.
Their families
yes.
then?
Yes, yes, yes. I did know that they'd in turn Oswald Mosley. I knew Oswald Mosley personally. I knew him personally. I knew him when he was a Labour MP for Aston in Birmingham. I knew his wife, Lady Cynthia, very well. In fact, I dined with him because I was very active in the Labour Party in my lifetime. I still am a member of the Labour Party. And it was so... I couldn't believe it possible that that this could happen. And I said to myself, well, they must be desperate. They must be desperate. They can't trust anybody. And there it was.
But what was the state of these people when you saw them on the errand?
Oh, they were very frightened. Very frightened, they were. They were very frightened. They were very frightened. God knows, I hate to say this, what the poor devils went through on that other boat, the Don Donwea, must have been really bad, because they already had one upset. And without even a break, they'd been put on the boat. It was absolutely... I've said this, I told Michael Foote this the other day, that in my opinion, the people that sent that boat out should be tried as war criminals. I made it very plain that this. In fact, I have always thought of writing the story myself one day and giving my opinion of it. I think it's outright a scandal that the people that went and done the research to get these people in turn didn't do the job properly. That's a disgusting shame. And I've always come out on the side of the internees. I've always fought for the underdog, and I think they were the underdog in this instance.
You also said that they were mixed. There were, am I right in thinking, Italians and Germans?
Yes.
And the Germans were also mixed as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there were Nazis there because they were the sign of the rest of it.
Were they?
Oh, yes. The swastika marked on their coats. But I say one thing about the Germans. When the ships to be, they were disciplined. They won self for themselves. They helped people get in the boat. I must say this, that they were very, very, very disciplined. There was one chap, I think his name was Captain Burford. He was really a man, a gentleman. He had his chaps on the boat. Great. I thought it was sad. It was sadness. It was sad.
And the internees, would they have been of all different ages?
Oh, yes. There were some young, some old. Some there was a scandal. Some must have been about 8 years old, some. Still terrible. And there were people there, young boys. Well, you know that they weren't on my boat, but there was a... Mario Zampi and Tony Rowlands. Tony Rowlands must have been this young little boy when he was interned, see? And there it is. But I admire Tony Rowlands and Charlie Forty for getting where they are today. Good luck to them. I'm very pleased with them. I knew Mario Zampi, Lord Charlie Forty. I knew Charlie Forty. And I think it must be wonderful that to men like Charlie Forty and Tony Rowlands have got to where they are today through their initiative, and this is very good.
Yes, you were saying the Italians were up on the top with you, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, they were.
On the top deck?
Yeah, yes.
Accommodation,
yes.
I understand there were a lot below as well.
Yes, what happened was this. The Italians had all the cabins were four, was eight in it, see? They doubled up. We were 12 in a cabin. Just imagine us, the smell, terrible. And you hadn't your underclothing, no change of underclothing. It was terrible. You could smell your chaps in there. So this is why we wouldn't go down. We stayed up top. My troops said, no, we stayed with you. I was up top. With us, they didn't call you corporal, they called you. We all knew each other before the war, see? And of course, they used to say to me, if I was nasty, I'm sure you wait this war, not going to last forever. You still got to come back to the Civil Street. And the old saying was, don't upset anybody going up the ladder because you might have to come down it, see? Of course, people got to realise this, that the Welsh and the Italians are both the same, what do you call it? They are the same sort of people. They mix up, they sing song and have sing song, and they talk each other, and they all sort of enjoy themselves. And of course, I always like to get it back at the English, because I used to tell them that, that the English, the Welsh beat them at Boswell Field, and we also but saved the French invading here in the 17th century. And the Wales, it belongs to Wales, not to England, and I always have that. And I have many, many arguments and many good argument with English people because I stick up for my native beloved Wales, I do.
Yes. If I could ask you a little more about this, it's very interesting you saying about this barbed wire and how you realised very early on the implications of that. Did they do anything about it before?
No, they did not do anything about it because of the fact was that they said that they didn't do anything about it because of the fact was that they hadn't enough troops to guard them all and they had to confine them to certain spaces, see? But that was a load of baloney. Because there were enough troops on the boat at all. They had more officers than they had bloody men. I couldn't understand why they had all these officers there. They had another chap, officer, I knew, Major Drew. He was there. What he was doing there, I don't know, but he was there. And there was a lieutenant constable. Afterwards, he got made a major in some internment camp somewhere. But Captain Major Bethel, from the tank corps, they say he was good. I don't agree with them. I don't agree at all because Captain MacGregor Miller was a far superior officer than he was. But of course, again, that's only my opinion. Of course, they would say that I was prejudiced against him because of the fact was that I was always saying about Welsh and all Welsh officers there. Well, of course, I know that I served in many English battalions after that, and there was no Welsh officer break on with everybody. I never got no problems.
Yes, why didn't you? Why weren't you particularly impressed with Captain Bethel?
Well, he was in the tank corps. He was a tank corps, and I had an attitude that they were above the everybody else. See, the tanks, but. I didn't.
When the ship was hit, you know, did he?
Oh, when the ship gone up, he came up there and he said, "Oh, what's on?" and all the rest of it. And Morton told him, but he stood there with me. And in fact, I done the work for him because I really knew what to do. I blocked the entrances up and I stopped anybody coming up the ladder because if they came up the ladder as a control of the boat, it'd be gone. And I stayed there until I was totally removed. And the one thing about it, I got all my men off under discipline, through discipline. If there had been discipline in the boat, everybody would have gone off. But there was no boat training. Nobody had life jackets when there was Jeff there. And also the fact that the barbed wire was covering the lifeboats. And it's just wrong. And even the plugs had been taken out of some of the lifeboats. Because when the boat's in the water's in. It was an absolute disgrace. Because that boat, the Arundora Star, before it had come down to Liverpool, it had been to Norway with the Polish division. And I met Poles afterwards and said, "Oh, beautiful boat." And what have people got to understand this, that the Arundora Star was the most luxurious liner in the world before the war. It was the most luxurious liner. In fact, it's laughable to think that you could do a three-week cruise in the Mediterranean for £49. One of Lord Vestey's boat. Can I come in here? One thing I forgot. I did come down from London and I went to see. I met another friend, another man who I made friends with on board the ship. His name was Hughes, and he was the purser on board the ship. And we got on very, very well together because he used to get us the cigarette last ration and seen that we had plenty of food. And he got lost on board the Arundora Star, and I came down to London, and I went to see Lord Vestey on the next day. And I went in to see Lord Vestey. He saw me, and I told him that he'd gone, and he said he had already been told. We thank you for coming down. And I said, "Don't forget, Lord Vestey, if you ever launch another boat, you want to make another Arundora Star." He said, "Yes." But of course, the Lord Vestey then and the Lord Vestey today, two different things. The Lord Vestey today didn't even answer my letters to him when I write to him. And I have, every year, at my own expense, placed a wreath on the cenotaph out of my own pocket. But now I can't do it anymore. It's too expensive. And when I wrote to Lord Vestey asking him if he'd share it, he didn't even answer me. And I didn't think much of that anymore.